Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 96. I'm recording it on Tuesday, February 17th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The name of the selection is Basement Floor. The title of the podcast is It's All Schroeder's Fault. Schroeder is a friend of mine who, an abusive poster friend of mine, who posts at the Goon Squad, the Goon Central discussion board. You can find a link to that at the homepage for my blog, but Schroeder is a defender of passive investing. And as you know, if you've listened to the other podcast, I am a critic of the passive investing model for understanding how stock investing works. And Schroeder puts forward a lot of abusive posts. And every now and then, though, he puts forward a good one. That's why I call him my friend, because I have learned from Schroeder, discussing things with Schroeder. And there was a post I put to that board yesterday, and I'll read from it, but and this is the theme that I want to explore in today's podcast. And it's sort of a joke, of course, the idea that Schroeder here is the that Schroeder himself is responsible, but it's a joke with a serious point to it. The idea that all of our economic troubles, our economic crisis is attributable to Schroeder. Now, this thread started with a post by Drip Guy, who was another highly abusive poster. And Drip Guy made a wonderful point in a post that he put to the Vanguard Diehards board. He said, I read this in yesterday's podcast. He said, now that I think about it, actually perversely, the less people believe in the efficient market theory, the truer it likely is. And the more people believe in it, the more mispricing becomes likely, in my humble opinion. And that hits it right on the head. And I wrote a post explaining why I believe that. The efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for the passive investing model. And that's the model is responsible for all the investing advice you've heard over the last 30 years. The idea that you can't time the market, buy and hold, stay the course, all this sort of thing, all comes from the efficient market theory. That's all passive investing. And it comes from a belief in the efficient market theory. And the efficient market theory says that the market always gets the price of stocks right. That's why you can't time the market, because if the market gets the price right and you think that you can benefit by changing your allocation, that means that you think you have a better idea what the price of stock should be than the market does. And that's impossible, according to the efficient market theory. But the efficient market theory is wrong. But, and we've actually known it was, well, we should have known it was wrong for a long time now. We have 30 years of academic research showing that. But we've had a hard time accepting that reality. Once upon a time, people really did believe in the efficient market theory. And many people believe in it in an important sense today, but they have doubts, and that makes them defensive, and it makes it hard to get a discussion going on the flaws of the efficient market theory, because those who believe in it are intensely defensive about it, because their common sense tells them this doesn't really add up. But our goal, if we want to invest more effectively in the future, is to learn, to what extent is the efficient market theory correct? And really, what do we need to do to make the market more efficient? That should be our goal. Because when we have an efficient market theory, then investing in stocks becomes easy, and investing in stocks becomes profitable and sensible. And so what we really should all be doing is working together to make the market more efficient than it is, because the market is not efficient today. That's why we've had this price crash. That's why this price crash was predictable. And that's why many, many people did predict this stock crash. Many people saw it coming because it was inevitable, given this widespread belief in the efficient market theory and in the passive investing school of investing. But Trip Guy hits it right on the head when he says, the less people believe in the efficient market theory, the truer it likely is. And the more people believe in it, the more mispricing becomes likely. And that's exactly the flaw of the passive investing model. What the passive investing model did was it imagined a perfect world. It imagined a world in which the market was efficient. And in that world, everything that the passive investing advocates tell you is true. In that world, it would be true that it would not be possible to time the market. In that world, it would be true that stocks would always offer a good long-term value proposition, all these things. But what they left out, what the passive investing advocates left out is, in order to make the market efficient and to keep the market efficient, we need to constantly remind, when I say constantly, I mean on a daily basis, we need to constantly remind investors that they need to pay attention to the price of the stocks they buy. If all investors, in order for the market to be efficient, investors need to be rational. And if investors are rational, they're going to pay attention to the price of stocks, just as they pay attention to the price of everything else they buy. None of us would buy a house without looking at the price. None of us would buy a car without looking at the price. None of us should be willing to buy stocks without looking at the price. Most of us will end up putting more money into stocks over the course of a lifetime than we will end up putting into a house or into a car or into all the cars we buy. So we all should be looking at price. And if we did, and that's rational investing. Rational investing is all of the ideas of passive investing, but with one big change: always pay attention to price. Always pay attention to price. And if we all paid attention to price, the market would be efficient and everything that the passive investing advocates told us would end up being true. But it is not at all true today. It is not at all true for so long as, because the big mistake the passive investing advocates made was they didn't tell us to pay attention to price. They told us we didn't have to worry about price. They told us just the opposite. And so all of the good work they did, all of the good work that they are responsible for, was destroyed by this failure to pay attention to price. And so Drip Guy hit it exactly on the head when he says, the less people believe in the efficient market theory, the truer it likely is. In other words, if you believe the market's already efficient, the market will become wildly inefficient as a result of your actions. Because if you believe the market is already efficient, you're not going to worry about price. And the more people believe in the efficient market theory, the more mispricing becomes likely. When everybody thinks they don't have to worry about price, that, you know, the market is somehow taking care of that, mispricings become just wild and insane. And we get into the sort of situation we were in from 1995 through the first part of 2008, when stock prices were insane. And of course, when stock prices go that insane, we end up having a huge price crash, which causes an economic crash, which causes all the troubles we are in today. So I won't read that again. I read my post about Drip Guy in yesterday's email, but there was a thought where I pointed out that I felt he had gotten it exactly right, and we all need to work together to pay attention to price and thereby to make the market efficient, not to assume it's efficient, to make it efficient. Well, Schroeder had a response to that. Schroeder had a response to that, and his response was very brief. He says, choose your morning sarcasm. And he gives two sarcastic responses. I had said, here's a statement that I made. I said, he pulled one statement from my response to Drip Guy, and I said, invest passively and you destroy the efficient market. That's true. Invest passively and you destroy the efficient market. See, we all want an efficient market. We're all united in that. But those who are advocating passive investing are destroying the efficient market, not deliberately so. But that's the effect. When you tell people the market is already efficient, The consequence is to destroy the efficient market, to make stock investing far more dangerous than it needs to be. In response to my statement, invest passively and you destroy the efficient market, Schroeder said, choose your morning sarcasm. And he gave two sarcastic responses. One is, it's all my fault. I apologize for investing passively and destroying the efficient market. And response number two was, sarcastic response number two was, I am the all-powerful passive investor. Blah. Today I destroy the efficient market. Tomorrow I destroy the world. So Schroeder's being sarcastic. But I responded to both of his sarcastic responses with the words below. In response to the first one where he says, I apologize for investing passively and destroying the efficient market, I wrote, I understand that you are not being sincere, Schroeder. But those words are indeed precisely what we need to hear from millions. Each and every one of us who invested passively, and I say in parentheses, I did this myself for a time. I was a passive investor for a time. Contributed to the problem. Each and every one of us needs to own up to the mistake. Then it's over. The answer isn't to hang Bernie Madoff from a tree. What Bernie Madoff did is not possible in a world in which people understand the ABCs of stock investing. It is not possible for most people to come to understand the ABCs of stock investing for so long as a good number of, quote, experts are promoting passive investing. When the idea that it is not necessary to change your stock allocation at times of insanely dangerous stock prices is something we all laugh at, we won't be hearing the Bernie Madoffs of the world saying what the Bernie Madoffs of the world say. And we won't be hearing the John Bogles of the world saying what the John Bogles of the world say either. I, and millions of other middle-class investors, look forward to the day when you can say the words quoted above in total sincerity. And you should, too. There is no downside to learning how to invest effectively. It's a win-win-win-win-win. And in response to Schroeder's second sarcastic response, where he said, today I destroy the efficient market, tomorrow I destroy the world, I wrote, these words too are true words. I don't think that you and the millions of others who invested passively woke up one morning with an intent to destroy the U.S. economy. But that is indeed what you did. There are consequences that follow when millions adopt a 100% emotional investing strategy. When you mess up, it is not just Schroeder who pays the price. The stability of the U.S. stock market affects all U.S. citizens. We all should be working together to see that you and the millions of other middle-class investors who believe today that passive investing can work learn what you need to learn to stop destroying both of you, both yourself and lots of others. Please think it over. Think about earlier times in your life when you held back for a long time from admitting a mistake and then eventually broke down and just acknowledged what had to be done. There was great power in those three magic words, I and was and wrong. That is the theme of today's podcast. The title of the podcast is, It's All Schroeder's Fault. And I am saying that, as you know, it sounds silly to say this one guy who posted on a discussion board, it brought the entire U.S. economy to his knees, but that is true. He didn't do it by himself, though. That's what makes it a joke. The reality is, it is Schroeder doing what he did, Schroeder investing passively, Schroeder not paying attention to price, and drip guy investing passively and not paying attention to price, and Mel Lindauer doing the same, and John Graney doing the same, and Rob Bennett for a time doing the same, and John Walter Russell probably for a time doing the same, and John Bogle doing the same, and Bill Bernstein doing the same, and Scott Burns doing the same, and on and on and on and on and on. What we have is a community problem. And we have to think about it that way. We have to stop thinking about investing as something we do as individuals. And it's nobody else's business how we invest. And we have to start thinking about investing as a community concern. Now, we all have a right. I'm not saying we don't have a right to make our own choices. I'm not saying that Schroeder doesn't have a right to invest passively if he pleases. But what I am saying is that we all should be concerned if he does so. When Schroeder and lots of others start talking that they're going to invest passively, alarms should ring. Alarms should ring. And we all should be upset. We all should be concerned. What is this going to lead to? When is this going to destroy our economy? And we all should be trying to educate people like Schroeder. We all should be speaking up. And this is the entire problem. This is the entire problem. This is what caused the stock crash. This is what caused the economic crisis, in Rob Bennett's opinion. But it's a lot harder to solve this problem than it seems. It might seem so easy. Why don't we just give people good information and the problem solved? People will naturally want to invest effectively, but it's not so. It's not so. Humans have weaknesses that stop them from wanting to invest effectively. That's a fact. And it's a fact we cannot ignore. And it's a fact that the efficient market theory ignores and that the passive investing model ignores. I have a large number of potential podcasts that I think of recording, and the way I decide which ones to record, usually there's either some post on the discussion board or some article in the news that I see that prompts me to record one over another. And that happened this morning, and it was an odd article that caused me to record this. I usually go looking for investing articles. I sort of make the rounds of the internet. But sometimes, of course, I stumble on other things, at political articles or economic articles or whatever. And I stumbled on it this morning. It was an interview with Bristol Palin, Sarah Palin's daughter. I believe she's 17 years old. And when Sarah Palin was picked as John McCain's running mate, a story came out about her daughter being pregnant. I believe she's maybe a senior in high school. And she was pregnant, obviously out of wedlock. Well, not obviously, but she was out of wedlock. And this became a news item for a week or so, I don't know. And Greta Van Susteren had an interview with Bristol Palin. Bristol Palin's now had the baby a couple months ago, I think a couple days after Christmas. And she had an interview with her. So this is not usually fodder for an investing podcast. But there was something that Bristol Palin said that instantly made me think of investing with my X-ray vision. When I've mentioned how once you become a rational investor, there are all sorts of things you notice that passive investors would just not notice at all. And the interviewer, Greta Van Susteren, was asking Bristol Palin about contraception. Was she just lazy about it? Did she not believe in it? Abstinence as the alternative. Did she consider abstinence? Does she believe in that? And Bristol Palin said, she said, abstinence, I can't quote her, but the gist of her message was, abstinence is the ideal. She said that would be wonderful. But she said it's also totally unrealistic. And I thought that was a good answer, because I do personally believe abstinence is ideal. And I also believe that to a large extent it's unrealistic. So I thought that was an honest answer. And a fairly intelligent answer. And, she said, why? Greta Van Susteren said, well, why? Why is it unrealistic? And Bristol Palin said, it's just to accept it today. And I presume what she meant by it, she meant, unmarried sex without marriage. It's just to accept it. Now, you know, there are people who would object to that. And in some cases, you know, rightfully so. We all, of course, we all make our own decisions. So the fact that it's accepted to have sex in high school does not mean it's required. There obviously are people who don't do it, and we all have that choice. We all are free people. Still, the point she was making is, you know, if this interview had taken place, I was born in 1956. If this interview had taken place in 1956, if a young girl, 17 years old, was having a baby out of wedlock, the interview would have been, I mean, I think the interview would have been pretty much unimaginable. It certainly would not have been conducted in the way in which it was. It was conducted in the sense that, you know, this wasn't being viewed as a good thing, but it certainly wasn't being viewed as a horrible thing. And in 1956, it would have been viewed as a horrible thing. And so the social environment has changed on this question. It's changed dramatically. And what Bristol Palin was saying, she's just giving recognition to that fact. She's saying when the social environment changes, the behavior of the people within the society change as well. Now, the behavior of every single, there's always going to be outlier personalities. There are going to be some, no matter how harsh the social criticism is of sex outside of marriage, there are going to be some who engage in it. And no matter how accepting the social environment is, there are going to be some who don't engage in it. There always are outlier personalities. But most of us go along with what, you know, quote unquote, society encourages. That's the way we're made. Most of us make our decisions. We sort of have our own preferences, but to a large extent, our behavior is shaped by what those around us are doing. And Bristol Palin is just pointing that out. She's saying, you know, abstinence may be the ideal, but she's saying it's unrealistic in today's society. And I just think it's an important point. Now, how does that relate to investing? Well, investing without paying attention to the price of the stocks you buy is like having sex without marriage when you're 17 years old. It's something we all want to do. It's something... And it's something we all know is not necessarily good for us. Every 17-year-old understands. I mean, first of all, you know, we all know that contraception does not always work. Is there anybody who hasn't sometime in his or her life had a friend who used contraception and it didn't work? Or who, you know, intended to use it and failed to use it or whatever? The point is, it doesn't always work, and everybody knows this. There are risks to having sex outside of marriage. All kinds of risks. There's more than one kind of risk. There's all kinds of risk. But everybody knows this. But yet people are going to do it, even though we know the risk. And that's largely because we are weak. We are weak. We give in to temptations. And it's not practical, it's not sensible to ignore that reality. Well, the same thing is true with investing. People, since the beginning of time, since the first stock market opened for business, have been investing money in stocks at times when they are insanely dangerous. This has been going on since the beginning of time. And what the people who concocted the passive investing model did was they just ignored that. They ignored all history. And they said, oh, somehow or other, they never said how this was going to happen. Somehow or other, people were going to become rational. And people would only invest in stocks when stocks offered a good long-term value proposition. And therefore, the price would be efficient. But of course, that didn't happen. What happened is people continued doing what they've always done. They invested at times when the price, when stocks were insanely dangerous. And they caused a massive... The problem is they did more of that this time than they've ever done before. Because this time, people not only had this desire, this human weakness, they had academic studies backing it up. They had academic studies saying, go ahead, give in to your desire. Imagine if they had academic studies telling teenagers they could have sex and there'd be zero chance of there ever being any negative consequences. Imagine what that would do to the teenage pregnancy rate. That's what we had happening in Investo World. We had people coming out, academics saying, we have studies showing that if you engage in the most irresponsible behavior that an investor could ever engage in, there will never be any negative consequences. We have studies proving this. Everybody wanted to hear about those studies. Now, nobody wanted to read them, because if you read the studies, you would see the flaws in them, and the flaws were pretty darn obvious. If Rob Bennett could discover the flaws in them, I think it'd be fair to say that just about anyone could. But no one wanted to read the studies. People liked to hear the results of the studies. They liked to hear the recommendations of the studies. They liked to hear the headlines describing the studies, because those headlines told them what they wanted to know. Now, that's the problem. And people are not accustomed to thinking about investing in this way. People are accustomed to thinking about investing, oh, it's a numbers game. You know, you got to check the numbers. And you do have to check the numbers. But one of the numbers you have to check is the number that tells you how out of control prices have gotten. And that's the number nobody wants to look at. That's the number where you report those numbers and people get angry. People don't want to hear it. You know, it's like, you know, they have these things in the high schools where they show these, I don't know what you call them, you know, they're basically little commercials, you know, telling people not to have sex, where they'll say, oh, you know, this is what it means to take care of a baby, and this is what it'll do to your career, and this is what'll happen, and all these things. And it goes in one ear and out the other for the majority of the teenagers. They don't want to hear it. The people doing these newsreels or whatever they are, they might be well-intended, but they've got a hard case to make. Well, it's the same thing. Trying to tell a passive investor that he's engaging in an insanely dangerous behavior. It's the same basic phenomenon. They don't want to hear it. And the question that's on the table now is can we do better? And, you know, there are people who say, you know, I see articles now where people are more open about it today than they were before the price crash. But what disheartens me is you'll see somebody write a good article about how Schroeder and millions of others caused this. It wasn't the experts, and it wasn't the bankers. It wasn't Bernie Madoff. It was millions of us who tolerated. You know, the experts gave us this insulting advice, this advice that insults our intelligence, and we tolerated it. We applauded them. We said, great job. Great job, John Bogle. St. Jack. Thanks for promoting passive investing. Thanks for getting us all pregnant. Thanks for causing us all to have to drop out of school. Thanks for causing our retirements to go bust. You see, he has a responsibility, Bogle and all the other experts, for giving bad advice, but we have a responsibility for letting him get away with it. And it's a circle. And you can break the circle at either end. But it's hard to break it at the expert end, because they've got millions of dollars involved here. If any of the experts speak out against passive investing, they lose millions of dollars of business. That'll just go to the guy next door, the guy who's promoting it. So it seems to me the better way to break the circle is to inform the investors who pay the price. You know, most of these experts, they've paid a price. A lot of them believe in passive investing, most of them. And so they've lost money too, but they've got millions. So even when, you know, if you've got 5 million and you lose 2-3 million, you've still got 2 million left. But that's not the case for a lot of middle-class investors. So we need to get this message out to the middle-class investors. We need to try to protect ourselves. But a lot of people who acknowledge this, they'll acknowledge that the problem was people, you know, investing recklessly. But then they'll say, oh, there's nothing that can be done. You know, this has happened before. It's just built into the genes. There's nothing we can do about it. And, you know, they can make a strong historical case. There's a lot of evidence for that. But it's a very disheartening sort of conclusion. And I don't think it's necessarily true. Because the truth is, we're doing more damage now than we've ever done before. Prices went higher this time than they've ever gone before. And middle-class investors rely on the stock market today to fund their retirements. So the damage being done here is more serious. And if the damage becomes serious enough, I think it is possible that we will break through the desire not to hear it. And we will get people to hear it, and we can change things. That's how change is accomplished. But what we really need to do is to stop thinking of investing as this solo act, and to start thinking of it as a community event. Because when we are isolated, when we have to deal with all these issues as individual investors, that's when our weakness beats us. We can't overcome it. You know, it reminds me of a 12-step program. There are a lot of alcoholics who are suffering horribly, and they can't overcome that addiction, and they do try. People say, why don't you try? Why don't you give it up? You know, and they do try, and they try, and they try, and they try, and they fail, and they fail, and they fail. And every time they fail, they're left more emotionally damaged than they were before. But then they get into a room where other people with a similar problem are there to share their stories and to help and to care. And they gain power from that. And that's what I think we need as investors. We all have this weakness. We all have this weakness, all humans. This weakness to believe that passive investing might work, to believe there's some magical world somewhere where you don't have to look at the price of the stocks you buy. But we all also have common sense. We all know that this could never be true. And when we get in a room together and we can share stories, we can strengthen each other. And we can do things as a community that we could never do. As a, you know, 100 people united as a community can do things that 100 people as individual investors could never accomplish. In other words, we need to stop thinking of investing as a solo act and think of it as a community act. And if anything has ever shown that it's a community act, I would think it would be this economic crisis. We're seeing our entire economy go into a recession, possibly a depression, because of the advocacy of a failed investing model. Do we not all have a right to protect our economy when it's attacked in this way? It seems to me that we do. Now, here's another angle I was thinking about the other day. John Graney, he's the guy who runs the Goon Central Board, and he's the guy who led the campaign of terror against the Retire Early boards and destroyed our boards because he made some errors in his safe withdrawal rate study and did not want to acknowledge them. Graney, you know, he's now devoted 7 years of his life to this. When he could have been using those years productively. He could have been making constructive, you know, contributions very early on. John Walter Russell and I invited him to work with us on the development of the new school methodology. And John would be right there in the middle. John Graney would be right there in the middle of it. And, you know, we're willing to take his help today if he wants to help. But instead, he's taken this other path. But I was thinking about John the other day, John Graney. And I don't know his numbers, but I know that he's reported on the boards that he has a 90% stock allocation. And I know that he's reported, I don't remember at the high, he had a total portfolio of, my recollection is between $2 and $3 million. I don't recall exactly, I don't know. If he had $3 million and lost, the stocks from January of 2000 through today have gone down roughly 60%. If he lost 50% of $3 million, he lost $1.5 million. Now his losses may be less than that, I have no idea. But even if he lost $1 million, that's a big loss. Or even if he lost $500,000, that's a big loss. It's hard for me to imagine he hasn't lost at least $500,000. Now, this is an individual who has spent 7 years of his life working full-time, you know, leading campaigns to destroy discussion boards because he doesn't want people to be able to discuss the realities of stock investing. And he has suffered himself a loss of something between $500,000 and $1 million. Is that unbelievable? I mean, he's hurting. He doesn't want to lose $500,000. No one wants to lose $500,000 or $1 million. No one alive. And this is a point I try to make. I try to make over and over again that I'll say rational investing is a win-win-win-win-win. Literally, I am not able to think of one person on planet Earth who would be hurt if we were to move from passive investing to rational investing. Not one person who would be hurt. I don't believe the stock selling industry would be hurt. That's the one that arguably you could say would be hurt, but I personally believe even the stock selling industry would be better off because middle class investors would have more confidence in stocks and there wouldn't be these ups and downs. And in the long term, I actually think the stock selling industry would be better off. I think the experts would be way better off because a lot of these people are very smart and they would love to be sharing information on all the things we've discovered in our community over the last 7 years. They would love to be doing that. And every single investor would obviously be better off. And the entire economy would be far, far better off, far more stable without these huge crashes and then these artificial high points. And even the worst of the goons would be $1 million better off. He'd have $1 million in his portfolio that he doesn't have today if he would allow honest and informed posting on how stock investing works in the real world. And yet he opposes it, and he opposes it viciously. And we have to ask ourselves why this is so. I'll give an illustration of just how bad it is. John Russell and I are working on we have three calculators at our website today and our websites today, and we're working on a fourth calculator, and the fourth calculator is called the Investment Strategy Tester. We hope to have this out in a few weeks. And so I believe it'll be available by the time this podcast is posted. And to give you some idea, the way that I hope to sell this is what I believe we need today to change, to bring our economic crisis to an end, is we need to gain back the confidence of middle class investors. We need to regain their confidence in investing in the stock market, in our economic system, and in our political system. You know, all those things have been shaken. We need to win back their confidence. I think the thing that affects people the most, obviously people have lost their houses, people have lost their jobs, people have lost their businesses. But the thing that affects the most people is that people have lost their retirements. people don't feel either their retirements are failing if they're already retired, or if they're not yet retired, they've fallen farther behind. Most of us were worried about whether we were going to be able to retire on time, and now we've fallen 5 years back or 10 years back, and so we're shaken. We need to win people's confidence back. Well, the investment strategy tester, I won't go into what the calculator does because that would take too long. I'll do that on a different podcast. But we always have our calculators appear at the websites, and then there are default results that show up when you go to the page where the calculator resides. And for the default results, we are planning to use a test that shows people what sort of improvement they can get in their investing results by making a choice to go with rational investing rather than passive investing. And so I did I ran a test here where I compare two strategies. Starting at the P10 level that applies today, and then it gives results. The calculator gives results for what you can expect 5 years out, what you can expect 10 years out, what you can expect 15 years out, 20 years, 25 years, and 30 years out. But what I did was I assumed that an investor has lost 30%, one-third of his money, say 33% of his portfolio value. So if you had $150,000 before the price crash, you would now have $100,000. That's, I think, more or less a typical scenario. There's obviously all sorts of variations, but trying to choose a somewhat typical scenario. And so I set this up to compare two strategies. One, a passive investing strategy, where the investor puts 50% of his money in stocks and then rebalances. He leaves his allocation at 50% for the next 30 years. And he starts out with $150,000. And I compared that to what happens to an investor who starts out with $100,000, $50,000 less, but instead of following passive investing, he follows valuation-informed indexing, which is a rational investing strategy. And you can get the details of what those strategies involve at the website. Basically, valuation-informed indexing means when prices go to insanely dangerous levels, you lower your stock allocation so that you won't lose as much money in a price crash. And then, because you have more money to invest in stocks from that point forward, you gain the benefits of compounding for decades into the future, and you end up at the end of 30 years with a far higher portfolio. So say that you started before the price crash and you had $150,000 and you've lost one-third, so you're down to $100,000. What switching to rational investing will do for you is it will essentially will reverse all of your losses. It will make you whole. You can invest today with $100,000 and get better results. You can invest today with $100,000 as a rational investor and get better results at the end of 30 years than a passive investor can get investing $150,000. So you only have $100,000. I can't actually give you the $50,000 back that you lost, but what I can do is show you a strategy that permits you to get as much, at the end of 30 years, you can get as much out of that $100,000 as the passive investor can get out of $150,000. That's how powerful the benefit is from switching to a rational strategy, a strategy where you consider price instead of ignoring price. Now, just briefly, I'll just tell you that when you look at the results on the calculator, what you see is at five years, the passive strategy is ahead. It's a passive strategy with $150,000 to start and an evaluation-informed indexing strategy with $100,000 to start. At 5 years, the passive strategy is far ahead. That's because they started with so much more money. See, this doesn't pay off instantly. That's the big thing that people have a hard time with rational investing, is that it is not a short-term strategy. It only works in the long term. Does not work in the short term. At 10 years, Passive is still significantly ahead. At 15 years, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. I would say that passive is still ahead. The best result for the valuation-informed indexing strategy is close to the best result for the passive, but there's more risk to the valuation-informed strategy. In other words, the low-end result is lower. So I would still say passive is ahead at the end of 15 years. At 20 years, that's not so much true. They're roughly the same. At 25, the valuation-informed indexing strategy goes a little bit ahead, and at the end of 30 years, the valuation-informed indexing strategy is far ahead. So you start out with $50,000 less. You start out and you make up that $50,000 plus more at the end of 30 years. And of course, if you're dealing with larger sums, if you're dealing with, you know, $200,000 instead of $100,000, you're going to get twice the benefit. The point is, I can show you a way to make up all of the losses you suffered in the stock crash. Isn't that what everybody wants? Doesn't everybody want to get the money back? I can do that. We can do it together. It shouldn't be, you know, it's not Rob Bennett at the head of the classroom telling everybody what to do. This is a community. We should be sharing ideas together. I can give some ideas and you can offer good ideas in response, and 50 other people can offer constructive ideas in response, and we all learn together. But in order to do it, there's an initial step that has to be taken. And that initial step is we have to acknowledge that passive investing, the idea that valuations have no effect on long-term returns, is nonsense. We have to reject that idea. That's how we get all the good stuff to happen. Now, why is it necessary to reject that idea? Isn't it sort of harsh to say, oh, you know, we have to be meanies? We have to tell people they got something wrong? Well, that's been the holdup so far for the first 7 years. People have felt, no, we can't tell people they got something wrong. It will hurt their feelings. But the trouble is, as long as people can't acknowledge they got something wrong, how can we ever move forward? The key to learning by definition means believing something you didn't believe before. And if you believe you know it all, you're never going to change your beliefs. So learning requires an acceptance that you didn't know everything before you started. So we have to do that. It's an essential step. The way I've put it is, either we need to get people to say, you know, I got it wrong, or at the very minimum, we need to get people to say, I don't know. At least, you know, I'm not sure. If people say I'm not sure, that opens up the possibility of, you know, moving forward. But that's the very bare minimum. That's the very bare minimum. Now, I've been thinking about this in political terms as well. And there was an article in, I believe it was Newsweek, cover article saying we're all socialists now. This is a somewhat controversial statement, but you know, the point they're making is that the public is willing to go along with just about any type of government takeover of anything today, because people are scared. Now, I don't think that's so surprising. The way I see it, I'll tell you what I believe happened is, politically, I believe what happened. I don't think this is an issue. I don't think the passive investing issue is an issue of conservatives versus liberals. I think it's an issue of, with acceptance of the passive investing model, we essentially rejected the formulation that made our economic and political system work. And here's what I mean by that. America is largely a free market economy. I think we pride ourselves on that. And the free market does some wonderful things. The free market unleashes the creativity of millions of individuals. And that system has worked for a long, long time. But there was a time, there were really two times, I guess, when it was under severe doubt as to whether that system worked. And well, it wasn't the free market so much, but there was a question whether our political system worked in the Civil War. And there was a question whether our economic system worked in the Great Depression. And what happened, in my assessment, and I'm no historian, but what happened in my assessment, in very general terms, is that we were following an approach called laissez-faire capitalism. There was very little government involvement in our economy prior to the Great Depression. And that system failed. We were in times in some ways similar to the times we're going through today, obviously much worse before. But the system failed. And we turned to government. And we came up with something called the New Deal. And the New Deal won acceptance of the broad majority of the people. And the New Deal wasn't a rejection of the free market. It was a restraint on the free market. There were protections at it. It was a governing of the free market. It was a formulation that said, yes, there will still be a free market, but it won't be laissez-faire. It won't be unlimited. There will be restraints. There will be rules. There will be protections. And that is what has worked during the greatest years of growth in the United States, in my opinion. And what happened with passive investing is we threw that away. We didn't repeal the laws. The laws all remained in place. Social Security remained in place and Medicare and all this sort of thing. But in terms of our retirement money, which for most of us is what we need to feel secure, we need to have some money put away so that when we get old, we won't have to work. So our retirement money is important. And our retirement money was taken away from us. It was taken away through promotion of this reckless approach to investing. This approach where you don't worry about prices, where you buy and hold, and you don't try to time the market, and you ignore price. It's dangerous. And your common sense tells you it's dangerous. But the experts told us to ignore our common sense. The experts said, no, 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 there's studies, it'll work. It'll work. Don't trouble your little head. Don't ask any questions. Don't ask any rude questions. It'll work. You don't have to look at price of stocks. And now what's happened? So that was essentially laissez-faire coming in under a different name, coming in through the back door. Because there's nothing really wrong with the idea of people promoting passive investing if people could hear the other side of the story. Because if you could warn people about the flaws of that approach, if you could show people how it has worked in the past, and passive investing has been tried 4 times in the history of the U.S. market, it brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the first time. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the second time. It brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the third time. And now it has brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it the fourth time. There's a pattern. Just as our common sense tells us, ignoring price can never work. Can never work. No matter how many studies they claim to have, it can never work. And of course, the studies are analytically invalid, the way they're set up. If you use analytically valid studies, they tell you just what your common sense says must be so. The analytically valid studies all support rational investing, not passive investing. But it wasn't a free market Or if it was a ruthlessly free market. The kind of free market it was a free market where there was no restraint. This is why the attacks on our discussion boards were so vicious, because we had thousands of people expressing a desire to learn about the realities of investing. But if we were to discuss the realities in full open discussion, passive investing collapses to the ground. It cannot be defended. I have never found anyone yet who could make a rational argument for why we should ignore prices. Never. And I've run into some of the most intense passive investing zealots in the world, and none of them have ever made even an effort to put forward a rational case or a rational argument. They will say, oh, there's studies. That's about as far as they can go. But they can't explain how studies could show that valuations don't affect long-term returns, because they know that's nonsense. And they can't explain how, if valuations affect long-term returns, there wouldn't be a benefit to changing your stock allocation when valuations got to insanely dangerous levels, because there is no argument that can be made. So was it a free market or was it not a free market? See, what we really have to ask, the core question here is, what is a free market? It's free in the sense that, they would make this case when I would be posting at the boards. They would say, oh, Rob, you're free to say what you want. You're free. What's your complaint? It's a free board. You can say what you want. But then if I had five people come on and say, Rob, I'm very excited about what you're saying. Please explain this to me. I want to understand stock investing better. Someone would get on and threaten to kill the wife and children of anyone who asked such a question, or to put up a porn site with their name on it, or to, drag their name through the mud all over the internet. And then the people asking the questions would drop off the thread. So was it a free market? Or was it an unfree market? See, there's a point at which an insane level of freedom is a subtraction from freedom. If people are free to make death threats, and if people are free to set up porn sites and put people's names on them and drag people's names through the mud, that cancels out freedom. It's not freedom. It's a canceling out of freedom. And of course, this was really the problem with laissez-faire. You had these situations where, in England, this is where Karl Marx rose up. You'd have 14-year-old children working in factories 16 hours a day and being paid 2 cents. And they'd say, well, it's a free market. If they want to starve to death, they're free to do so. They don't have to agree to work 14 hours a day. They can starve to death. Is that freedom? The New Deal was a process by which we made freedom meaningful. We retained the free market, but we put restraints on it. For example, we have a minimum wage law that says you are free. You are free to run your business as you please, but you will not pay people less than this amount of money per hour. That would be a violation of law, and we had a government who would step in and enforce that freedom. So it's a freedom, but it's a sane freedom. It's a restricted freedom. And that's what I believe is missing in the passive investing model. Passive investors will not permit their model to be questioned. It's 100% dogmatism. Questioning is not permitted. And I challenge you to find anywhere where these basic questions about passive investing have been answered. The basic question is, do valuations affect long-term returns? And if they do, how much should we change our stock allocations when prices go to insanely dangerous levels? And if anyone who advocates passive investing can answer those questions, I would like to hear about it. And if they can't, then passive investing doesn't stand up to scrutiny. And that's the advice that we've been using to plan our retirements for 30 years now, most of us. That's not free. It's not free if we can't hear about the risks of it. So what we need, I think we do need, we need government regulation. But you see, we don't need government regulation to the point, you know, that Newsweek is talking about where it says we're all socialist. We don't need government getting involved in every aspect of society. What we need is government getting involved to the point necessary to let the free market work. But the free market has essentially destroyed itself with its excess freedoms. Irresponsible freedoms. Well, the point here is that all the Schroders of the world, and we're all Schroders, we're all individual investors trying to do the best we can. We all collectively caused this problem because we all are weak. You know, just as this 14-year-old child, he drives everybody else's wages down because he's willing to work for 2 cents a day. Why is he willing to work for 2 cents a day? Because he has a human weakness. He gets hungry. See, this is how a ruthless capitalist system takes advantage of humans. It exploits our weaknesses. I'm a capitalist, but I'm not insane about it. I believe there have to be restrictions. And I believe in stock investing, but I believe there need to be restrictions. I believe we need to be able to inform people of what the historical data says about what works and what doesn't work. And when people are doing dangerous things, they should be warned. And if people are putting their retirement money into stocks at a time when the most likely long-term return is a negative number, people should be informing them about that. What we need is collective action. We need government support for the idea of allowing people to hear both sides of the story on passive investing. People need to be able to hear the message of why passive investing has never worked in the real world and never can work in the real world. And no one of us is big enough or strong enough to go up against the lobby of the stock selling industry and to make this case. There's too much money there, too much power. We need somebody in our corner. And I think that's a legitimate role for government. And for nonprofit organizations. There should be nonprofit organizations like Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports steps in and helps us learn how to buy cars. We need Consumer Reports stepping in and helping us to learn how to buy stocks, how to protect us from people advocating passive investing. This is dangerous stuff. It's something I really am saying here that we all are guilty. It's a collective problem, and we will solve the problem collectively. When Schroeder gets to a point where he doesn't want to continue losing money in the stock market, and he really wants to be able to retire early, Schroeder is going to get behind the idea of allowing discussion of rational investing. He's going to endorse it. The same thing's true with John Graney. The same thing's true with Mel Lindauer. Why not? None of these people are hurt by allowing discussion of the alternatives. But they think they are, because they think of themselves as isolated actors, and the thing that they're worried about is their own pride. They're thinking, well, you know, I made a mistake, and I don't want anybody to know I made a mistake, and you know, it goes on and on and on and on. And of course, you know, Drip Guy made a point. He said, well, you know, did Graney really make the mistake, or was Graney just a... forget the word he used. Oh, I can't remember it. You know, basically he was just being used by the stock selling industry. And that's sort of true and sort of not. He's being used to promote passive investing. I certainly don't think that Graney knew about the flaws of passive investing when he put his study together. But I don't think he's being used in the sense that the people who advocate passive investing themselves are being used. I don't think they're aware of the flaws either. You see, we're being the bad guy here is human weakness. The bad guy is that get-rich-quick impulse that lurks within all of us. lurks within Schroeder, lurks within me, and lurks within you. And we need to collectively take on that weakness. And the way we take it on is by informing ourselves about what the historical data says, what has worked throughout history. And the same thing has always worked, and the same thing has always failed. And the thing that has always failed is ignoring price. That's what makes stocks dangerous. But how do we work up the courage to acknowledge that, to let that in, to acknowledge that we've been stupid, we've been foolish, we've been reckless, we've been irresponsible, we've hurt people, we've hurt our friends and our families and our neighbors? Didn't we acknowledge that after the Great Depression? Isn't that what the New Deal was all about? That we had hurt people and that we were going to change the rules of the game? That's what I think we're facing today. We're facing a time when we need to change the rules of the game. We need to say we shouldn't be willing to give up stock investing, because we give up stock investing, we hurt ourselves. We send ourselves backwards. And that's why I don't think we can get out of this economic crisis so long as people are thinking the answer is to give up on stocks, because all those people are doing is locking in their losses. What we need to do is to move in the direction that I'm suggesting with the example I gave from the strategy tester. We need to tell people how to get back the money they lost. And the way they get it back is by learning a more effective way to invest. But you can't get there without that first step. The first step is the one that's always held us back. Can we admit making mistakes? Can Schroeder admit that he's made a mistake? It rests on his shoulders, and I don't mean just Schroeder, but Schroeder and a million others, many millions of others. We all made mistakes. We're all human. The people who came up with the efficient market theory ignore that reality. We need to get in their face and tell them no. Don't tell us this bogus gibberish. We are human. Give us a strategy that will work for humans or go away. Rational investing, I believe, is a strategy that will work for humans. I don't say it's perfected. I want to have millions of people contributing and making it the best strategy it can be. But I do believe it's the right track. I do believe accepting that valuations affect long-term returns is the key to turning our economic situation around. If you have thoughts on how to go from here, please let me know. There's a contact Rob button at the bottom left-hand side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do that.